This is CICK News. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Each week, we provide an update about events and issues developing right across Northwest BC. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com or subscribe to our podcast. CICK News broadcasts from unceded Ginamden Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. All right, today on CICK News, we hear from Chief Namox and Molly Wickham, also known as Slado, as well as Hollywood actor Mark Ruffalo about why they have joined forces to fight the Coastal GasLink pipeline and why 65 other Hollywood celebrities are threatening to pull their money from the Royal Bank of Canada and City National Bank in support of the Wet'suwet'en against CGL. Also, it's that time of year again when road dust from winter gravel and sanding consumes our dry streets and air quality goes way down because of it. That's why tomorrow the Bulkley Valley and Lakes District Airshed Management Society is hosting a webinar which will focus on a recent report about our local air quality. President of the BVLD Airshed Management Society, Dave Stevens, will tell us more. Stay with us.
I am Chief Namox. I currently am the highest ranking chief of the Tsai, the Beaver Clan of the Wet'suwet'en Nation, and I am calling from my home in Sekya, which is Wet'suwet'en village of Hegulgen.
Great, Namox. Thanks so much for being with us. Of course, over the last little while, there's been a campaign that has been growing momentum around wanting to see divestment from RBC out of the CGL project and other hydrocarbon fossil fuel projects that they invest in. And you seem to have collected some celebrity support in this endeavor. Maybe tell me a little bit about how this campaign came to be and what happened last week.
Okay, the campaign itself is called No More Dirty Banks, and you can find it nomoredirtybanks.com. And that was actually brought forward by a number of celebrities that deal with Hollywood, because City National Bank, which is a subsidiary of Royal Bank of Canada, refers to itself as the Bank of Stars, and yet they have not told their clients who actually invest their money in that bank that their money is subsidizing the CGL pipeline as well as other dirty projects in North America. And so not only celebrities, but a number of people have stated that they are going to pull their money out. We gave them an option of actually stating that they would move quicker. And I'm talking about City National Bank and Royal Bank of Canada. We had a preliminary meeting with them, and it was really not going anywhere. And so Mr. Mark Ruffalo, as well as a lot of his friends and associates, said, you know what, we need to pull our money out, because we never knew that our money was subsidizing such a dirty project, nor the criminalization of our people, that inhumanity that we are being treated on a daily basis, nor these criminal acts of removing us from the land, arresting us, putting us in jail, and then before the courts.
And last week, you were able to more or less launch this campaign, and you had a few celebrities, or one in particular, that was helping you kind of launch this. Tell me a little bit about the event last week and how that came to be.
Well, it came to be because Mark had sent out a letter along with one of our other people at work with us, Alex Ebert, and they were surprised at how quickly celebrities had signed on. They said they brought it out to them, and immediately they had in excess of 65 celebrities that had signed on. And he said he was absolutely shocked. He knew that he would get some in there, but he didn't think that he would have such a heavy and big response. And you got to think, you know, you got Robert Downey Jr., Leonardo DiCaprio, Joaquin Phoenix, Michelle Pfeiffer, Jane Fonda, you know, with names like that, and to jump on immediately is quite amazing. And today at the event I spoke at was Meryl Streep as well. So these are some pretty well-known celebrities. And they said that their money, they had no idea that their money was tied into Coastal GasLink. And now they said, well, if the banks don't pull out, we will. It's our money.
I guess one other thing, you know, what does this mean for, you know, the issues that you've been dealing with in the Wet'suwet'en, some of the Wet'suwet'en have been dealing with trying to fight Coastal GasLink. How do you think this is going to go? I know there's a bit of a deadline and a meeting coming up with shareholders in that with RBC. But tell me a little bit about what this means for you and the folks that you're working with to combat CGL and the work that's going on in your territory.
Well, it absolutely means the world to us, because it is money that is driving this entire project as well as others. If that money disappears, the projects disappear. You know, and for us to be criminalized the way we are, now we have humanity in there. Money doesn't have a conscience. The people who have the money do. And it is those people with pure hearts, good souls, and a conscience that are willing to step up and say, you know what, our financial institution is not doing the right thing. So we are going to. And with that, there's support there. There's also the opportunity to educate people around the world on what exactly is happening on our land.
Obviously, there's been also a lot of criticism about this, about, you know, mostly American celebrities, you know, supporting the work that you and others are doing here. And then also last week we saw that the announcement was made that Coastal GasLink, or a number of First Nations here in the North, have acquired an equity stake in Coastal GasLink, which from some sources that I've heard from is not actually a done deal. It's been offered, and they have an option to buy into the project, but no money has been granted, and they actually don't own anything, any part of that the pipeline just yet. You know, but what would you say to that, where we are seeing some First Nations elected bands signing on to these agreements with this pipeline?
Well, firstly, when they start talking about Americans or anybody else that are not Canadian, like stepping up to the plate and saying, you know, the Wet'suwet'en are doing the right thing. We're in climate crisis and we're doing the right thing. That is wrong. Think about who actually owns the pipeline. Think about who invests in the tar sands as well as all the gas. That is all foreign. If you think about CGL, the five basically countries that are involved, along with Royal Dutch Shell, of course, they have some of the worst human rights violations on the planet. And this is what British Columbia and Canada is supporting. And now they say that because people stand up that may not live in Canada, why are they not targeting the foreign owners of these very projects? And as for the option on those equity shares, I believe it's a publicity stunt. I think it's more propaganda to help divide people, that old divide and conquer tactic. And why on earth at one point did they say 20 First Nations? And the reminder, that pipeline does not go through any of the reserves that have signed on. But now it's down to 16 and it's actually dropping. And then a 10% equity share, again, that is not a reality at this point. It is actually just talking notes. Like, where does that money come from? I don't believe that this is anything more than something that the industry, as well as government, want out there and have people believe that this is a done deal and Indigenous people support it. The majority of our people don't. You know, it's a very small group that actually signs on. And if you actually look at who they say are investing and who they're going through, these are created entities that are supported by the oil and gas industry.
I guess, you know, at this point, now that the campaign is going and clearly there's some momentum behind it, what comes next?
Continue on with what we're doing. We're getting support not only from Canada, U.S., but around the world. And people are waking up and getting educated on the fact that any money that goes into these projects is actually promoting violence. I believe the ones that have contracts with them or sign agreements with them must take some ownership of the violence on the land. You know, when you support a project, does that mean you support the violence that comes with it? I don't believe that many people would do that.
All right, Chief Namok, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much for your insight and sharing some of your thoughts with us today. We'll definitely be in touch as this continues to develop.
For sure, and thank you for calling. And be aware, this is not the end.
Up next, we'll hear from actor and activist Mark Ruffalo about why he and other actors from Hollywood decided to jump into this fight and support the Wet'suwet'en.
Yeah, I'm part of one of the 65 celebrities, artists, musicians, producers, directors, and agents from Hollywood who've signed on to this letter requesting that RBC and City National Bank, the Bank of the Stars, stop funding the Coastal GasLink pipeline that is now trespassing on land that they have not gotten permission to transverse, to stop funding what has essentially become the brutalization of the Wet'suwet'en people and their allies who are defending the sovereignty of their land and traditions, and to stop funding what is ultimately nothing more than a modern day land theft and the act of erasure of the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chief's title to their land and an active systemic muting of their independent and sovereign voices. Now, since the Supreme Court's decision that awarded the title of this land to the hereditary chiefs, RBC has not taken the time to listen to nor consult the hereditary chiefs. This is the bank that tells us in all their literature that they want to honor First Nations rights and work with First Nations people, but it took them 25 years to actually sit down and speak with the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs. 25 years. And not once during the last decade of TransCanada Energy and Enbridge trying to force pipelines through the Wet'suwet'en people's sacred lands, their yinta, their burial sites, their berry patches, their creeks and wetlands, their cultural sites and hunting grounds, has RBC been willing to meet with the chiefs face to face until a little over 2 weeks ago. And only when a high profile client insisted that they meet with them. It's not right. What RBC says about working with Indigenous people or honoring the United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People, it's just not true. Now, RBC wants us all to believe that they're working with First Nation people, listening to them, consulting with them. Unless, of course, those First Nation people say no. And at that point, at that moment, those First Nation people seem to no longer exist to RBC. Or in this case, they never actually ever existed. But I'm a man who believes in hope of action and the decency of people to do the right thing. Do I think that RBC, Dave McKay, John Stackhouse, or Lindsay Patrick of RBC are bad people? I don't want to, but I do believe they've been duped by TransCanada Energy. I've met with most of these people in private on this issue to no avail. Sometimes public pressure like this is what makes people see things in a more honest, moral light. It is still my hope that when we all put pressure on them and the bank, that they will see the problem in the clear light of day, that the Canadian people will see the truth in a clear-headed way, and that RBC will stop funding these faulty pipelines and the fossil fuel extraction that is destroying the world for our children. The signatories on this letter, City National Bank's clients, have core values that RBC is violating. We do not want to leave our bank. We like City National Bank. But at the end of the day, we cannot let our money in any way be associated with the brutalization and erasure of any First Nations people and the extraction of fossil fuels. It's as simple as that. Not while the world burns around us and causes so much loss and suffering. Now, at this point, the most effective thing any of us can do is pull our money out of institutions that continue to fund the fossil fuel industry. I invite you all to join our campaign. Check out the website, put pressure on RBC, call them out, call out Dave McKay, and consider dropping them if they don't do this and stop this. Today, there are options for clean banks. There are places we could put our money that don't fund these monstrosities, where there weren't several years ago. Now that we know all of this, now that our eyes are opened, we can't relearn our ignorance. So now we must act. If we call ourselves good people, then we have to act now. And the quickest way to do that is through money. This is a question of humanity. The one thing the world keeps showing us over and over again is our common humanity, our common relationship to each other, whether it's the pandemic or it's the war in Ukraine. We're bound to each other. We have a responsibility to each other. And it's time for good people and privileged people like us to do the right thing, to make other people, good people, uncomfortable. That's the only way we're going to break through this system of racism, neglect, and harm.
Up next, we'll hear from Molly Wickham, also known as Slato, spokesperson for the Get It Done Checkpoint, about how getting celebrity support is a game changer for their fight against a coastal gas link.
This is Slato. I'm the spokesperson for Get 'Em Done Checkpoint. I belong to the Castia House of the Get 'Em Done clan.
Slato, thanks so much for being with us again here on CACK News. Of course, last week you got some pretty heavy hitters lining up behind you in support of your fight against CGL, coming all the way from Hollywood. More than 65 celebrities have put their name to a letter calling for divestment from fossil fuels for their bank, RBC and City National Bank. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what happened last week and how you acquired this kind of support coming all the way from Hollywood.
Yeah, so it kind of just happened organically through building relationships with a couple of different people who have been involved in different divestment campaigns in the past around banks. And so people are very concerned about the climate right now. We've gotten to know people and they've heard our firsthand stories about the human rights violations that are happening in Wet'suwet'en territory. And so it kind of just all came together, with different people getting the word out and, having conversations with the Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chief. And so, yeah, it's become a huge deal. There's a lot of money that the celebrities have, their own money that's investing in CNB, City National Bank, which is owned by RBC. And so they have the ability to say, hey, look, we don't want our money invested in this kind of project. We don't want our money, exacerbating the climate crisis right now. And so if you don't do something about it immediately, then we're going to pull out all our money. And, these celebrities, they have the kind of money that would make a huge impact on RBC. More money than they even have probably invested in the CGL project.
Last week, you did hold a webinar press conference of sorts with a couple of these celebrities. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that event and some of the outcomes and what you hope what the outcome of this support will be in the end.
Yeah, so we had a webinar press conference with Mark Ruffalo, who is the Hulk, and he's been a huge support of us, and he is encouraging different celebrities to come out and have conversations and support us. And so there was also Alex Ebert, who's been involved in writing a letter to CNB and getting, a lot of different celebrities signed on to that letter. And so we're hoping that this can be enough to show them that we're going to continue to keep making a big deal about it because it's a big deal. If we have to get celebrities involved and if they're making noise about it and threatening to pull their money and encouraging other people to take action, then it's just going to bring that much more international attention to the issue and that this is an issue that's couched in the larger problem of violation of Indigenous rights and the climate crisis. So I think that we're in a good position CNB has to listen to the money. You know, they clearly don't care. RBC doesn't care about the Indigenous people who are being affected by this, but they do care about money. And so if they're being threatened to lose a huge percentage of their clientele at City National Bank, which is the Bank of the Stars, then that's going to make an impact on them. So I think that we want to see the pressure build even more. Like, this isn't just a one-time, you know, event. We're going to continue building pressure against RBC and CNB until they pull out of the Coastal GasLink pipeline.
Obviously, you and others have been involved in this fight on the ground for several years, and there's work ongoing still. The drilling of the Wet'suwet'en seems to be coming to a head in the near future here. But last week, after the press conference with some of these celebrities, there have been a number of criticisms talking about the fact that, you know, these A-listers, some people like Scarlett Johansson, Leonardo DiCaprio, of course, Mark Ruffalo, that who are they to jump into this fight? Obviously, with fast cars and big houses and planes, they don't have the smallest footprint, carbon footprint, at the best of times. So what would you say to some of the criticism coming out asking why these celebrities are getting into this fight, which is far from Hollywood?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because we often see the same criticism from, you know, people that have like underlying racist thoughts about like Indigenous people who are trying to defend our land. Hey, Indigenous people who are trying to defend our land, not able to drive cars. And so we're criticized for driving cars, you know, and caring about the environment. And I think that's that same kind of criticism, is that we live in a world where all of these horrible things happen that devastate the earth, and we still have to live in this world, and people are trying to make a difference. And I think that they're, you know, everybody is entitled to be concerned about the climate crisis. Everybody is entitled to be concerned about human rights violations, and everybody should be concerned about those things. These celebrities are using their privilege and the fact that they have money, a lot of money, to try and make a difference and to try to put that money behind Indigenous people and Indigenous groups and try to put their privilege on the line for our cause, which I think is wonderful. And I think that more people should get involved and do that as well. So I don't, you know, I think John Horgan had a comment about, you know, people in should stick to their trade and not get involved in provincial politics. This project that's happening in so-called BC is going to impact people everywhere in the world because of the climate crisis. This is going to impact people outside of our communities, all over the place, and everybody should be concerned about it. I think that Indigenous issues and violations of Indigenous rights and the climate crisis are things that everybody should be talking about.
Just a couple more things for you, Molly. Obviously, since the last time we spoke, work has continued at the drill site, preparing the area, the ground there, to bring in a drill rig to drill tunnel, rather, underneath the Wet'suwet'en. What is happening out on the territory at this point? We're into March now. The ground has begun to thaw. Maybe you can give us a little bit of an update as to what is happening currently on the ground.
We've heard that they're continuing work. They've said that they're going to continue work and continue to drill. We don't know timelines. We are actually being totally prevented from monitoring the area and being on the territory by our CMP and private security. So we are not able to have any movement on our own territory in order to watch and see what's actually happening out there. So as far as we know, they're still continuing to drill as planned, but it's unclear to us exactly where they're at in that stage in the process.
Just the last thing for you, Molly. Now that you do have this campaign going, calling for RBC and City National Bank to divest their monies from fossil fuel extraction and the Coastal GasLink pipeline, and you have some momentum clearly with more than 65 celebrities putting their name to that call, what comes next? What's the next step here?
I mean, the next step is to continue our work monitoring on the ground to ensure that we're going after investors and that we're going after the people that are paying for the destruction of our lands and the violation of our rights. And so RBC is not going to be the only bank that we're targeting. Other financial institutions are going to be held accountable, and so are the people that are insuring this project. I think that we are not done by any stretch of the imagination, and we'll continue to resist this pipeline for as long as it continues to trespass on our territory.
Okay. Molly Wickham, Slado of the Wet'suwet'en Nation, thanks so much for giving us your time today and a bit of an update, and we will stay in touch as this story continues to develop. Coming up next... Every season, around this time of year, we see dust plumes kicking up from the streets of Smithers across the Bulkley Valley and other communities in Northwest BC. Of course, during the winter, snow and ice requires gravel and sand, but once the snow and ice melts, what's left is a real issue for air quality in our valleys. Tomorrow, Dave Stevens, president of the Bulkley Valley and Lakes District Airshed Management Society, will be hosting a webinar to talk about a recent report that was commissioned taking a look at the air quality here in the Bulkley Valley as well as other places and other communities and how they're dealing with that air quality. Although things have changed dramatically over the last 30 years since the fight with beehive burners in the 80s and 90s, we still have an air quality issue here in the Bulkley Valley especially, and if you look around on your next walk around town, you'll see it. Slowly things are getting better as crews get out there and sweep the streets, but for now, air quality and the dust created from sand and gravel is still a serious health issue. Joining me right now is Dave Stevens, president of the BVLD Airshed Management Society.
My name is Dave Stevens. I live in near Wet'suwet'en right now, New Brunswick originally. The technical term for a person from New Brunswick, just for your listeners, is a herring choker.
Okay, good. Good, we got that out of the way. So Dave, tell me a little bit about, you know, some of the work you're doing around the airshed, air quality here in the Valley, and then this webinar that you have going this week.
I became involved in air quality issues after I moved here. And when I stopped being a tree planter, when I was a tree planter, I spent all my time in the bush. I just came back to town to do my laundry, get drunk, and go back to work. And that worked fine. I have a lot of fun. I have no money to show for it, but still had a good time. And then when I started working in town, my health started to go downhill. I didn't make the connection for quite a long time. It was finally pointed out to me by Biz Bastian, who used to be a doctor. Lots of your listeners would know her. And finally, she said that she was going to enter a piece of litigation around beehive burners, which are the big TP sawdust burners that were here. And would I join as an appellant? So I did that, and I spent 3 years in court. I had no idea it would take such a long time, but you know what? They're gone.
Yeah.
And then various other improvements have been made over the years, and see, there's a saying they have on the prairies, eh? If you want to be heard, speak up. If you want to be seen, stand up. If you want to be appreciated, shut up. I don't care about being appreciated.
I guess going through that experience, you know, how would you say the air quality is between then and now? Is it better now that we got rid of those beehive burners? Because this is the time of year, you know, we just mentioned there's dust on the road. You know, you can see it. You know, they're trying to clean it up. But this month, you know, usually March, April, always this happens, and you can see the air quality monitor that's there on King, you know, just across the park there at Muheim,
yeah.
You know, and you can track it, and you see the dust, you see it going up. So do you think that the air quality has improved since those days?
My interest in air pollution issues is its effect on human health. There are other concerns, and other people address those. That's what I'm concerned about. Not only myself, although there is that, but children and people with respiratory or cardiac issues. They're all adversely affected. The types of pollution vary at different times of the year and in different places. The little brochure that I tried to give to you just now, the summary of air quality in this area, was put together by Ben and Sue Brooks, who lots of your listeners will know. And they made an excellent engineer and graphic designer writer combo to put that together. We found a grant from the Glass Waters Foundation to pay them and to have the printing done. And BV Printers did an excellent job for us. We're really very happy about that. We hand out these brochures. Anyone who wants to read up on some of the work we've been doing, go to Mountain Eagle Books and ask Janet, and she'll give you one of these booklets. And we have a store copy there, too. So that was pretty nice. One of the issues that we have to try to do is to persuade people to adopt better means of doing things. And it's just as well to have a sound factual basis to back up your opinions. So we've been going at that in two ways. Now, this summary of local air quality document is a plain language version of a much larger and much more complicated scientific study that we commissioned by Dr. Judy Krasinovsky. She did a great job for us in the face of great difficulties on her end and at our end, namely coming up with the money, for example. It's a document for experts. It's based on a GIS system, and in the right hands, it can be extremely revealing of what pollutants were released where. So that takes care of the problem of sources. There's also a question of, what is it actually like on the ground? So the Ministry of Environment has a beautiful air quality monitoring station at Muheim School here in Smithers, another one at the Fire Hall in Houston, another one at the Burns Lake Fire Center. They must have been a couple $100,000 a piece. You know how long that would fund us? I figure about 45 years, okay? So we can't afford to do that. They measure more than we do. They're concerned about other things. They have a provincial scope and policy. We don't do that. We concern ourselves with particles. So this road dust you were just talking about. This little device is what's called a purple air monitor. Anybody who wants to know can look at purpleair.com. It's a commercial product. These two little gadgets that I'm showing you in the bottom here, these little two blue thingies, those are the sensors. They're assembled in an instrument. Inside the instrument is a tangle of electronics and various other things. So the idea that I had was, I'll get these purple air monitors, I'll put them on the side of people's houses, and they'll talk over their Wi-Fi radio on a real-time map. And that really works. You go to purpleair.com and look at the map. It's a global map and a global project, and you can just pan and zoom, go right into Smithers, and you can see where all the monitors are, click on them, see the readings. It does a great job. So I thought, I'll put one as close to the hospital as I can. That would be an obvious source of susceptible people, right? So that's this one. So what always happens when you're optimistic about technology is that it breaks. So that's why I have the guts of it here. And so I can't actually repeat verbatim on the air what I said, and I'm not going to repeat it tomorrow at the webinar either. However, what it amounts to is, why doesn't it work? Okay, so it will eventually, or I'll buy another one or whatever.
So essentially, people, if they want to know, if they want a better handle on kind of the air quality around their house, they could pick one of these up, attach it to their home, and then go online and look up the readings.
The inventor is the only supplier. He's formed a firm to supply them, a for-profit operation. And people who want to know, well, if you wanted to buy one outright, just go on the website and put in your card number. It'll show up a couple weeks later in the mail. $400 in hand, Canadian dollars, that's what it costs. And you get something like this, a little white cylinder, and a power supply to plug it into. And you attach it to your Wi-Fi, that's it. There are no more costs after that. Usually they'll run for about 2 years straight. This one is an exception. It was about 5 months old. I think more than that. But I think the heat dome last summer and this extreme cold pretty hard on the equipment. These are made, these sensors are made in China. They're made for the climate of Beijing, not for the climate of 55 North. So there's that. I would advise people to go to the public library in Smithers, where we put together a pollution persuader kit, which has one of these. It won't cost you a cent. And right beside it is a Honeywell air filter. And you borrow this kit, it won't cost you a cent, and take it home. Set up the gadget in a room in your house. And then connect it to Wi-Fi and look at what the readings are in your home. Then turn on the air filter and watch the levels drop. So this is a bit reactive. This kind of strategy means let's measure what's going wrong and try to do something about it. It's much better for it not to go wrong. Yeah. But once people inform themselves and you have a better case, you know, you can make the argument. There's a lot more to it, but
yeah, no, and I know, you know, you've been involved in like, you know, the stove, you know, issues, and we burn a lot of wood here in the valley, and it sits in the valley. You know, we've had issues with that over a number of years. I burned wood. A number of people on my street burned wood.
Yep,
and so this would be perfect to pick that up.
Yep.
So is this what you're going to talk about in the webinar tomorrow? Tell me a little bit about what you're going to talk about in the webinar.
One of the things that became clear to me when I first got involved, like in this litigation and in local activities, was that it would be best not to act alone as an environmental activist. And so there was at that time a BC Environmental Network, so we joined. And that was a part of the national organization, the Canadian Environmental Network. And I became active there in these same areas around air pollution. The government of Canada has a big air inventory, such as this one, on an enormously larger scale. Environment Canada and Health Canada compile it. They've been doing it for 25 years, and they cover an enormous range of toxic substances, not only to the air, but to other areas. The National Pollutant Release Inventory, the NPRI, is not very well known, and I have participated right up close. I did a three-year job on that file. And so I'm well informed that way. And I and some of my colleagues will participate in a webinar tomorrow at 12:30, I think it is. And anyone who wants to know can go look at the website of the Watershed Sentinel. It's an environmental magazine out of Comox, watershedsentinel.ca. And anyone who's listening who knows me can email me and I'll explain why I can't do whatever it is you want. But anyway, I'll send you the URL. It's a very large open Zoom meeting, but you have to register to participate. It doesn't cost anything. And it's scheduled to run for an hour. And so we'll talk about different aspects of the NPRI, what the information is that's there, how to get at it yourself online. It's all free and available. Anyone can find it. And then what I'll talk about is what does the NPRI data do for us at the local level? One of the things is that the data they gather is public, and so that was a very large piece of input in our emissions inventory that we didn't have to pay for. There's no way we can tell whether PIR, to take a local example, has cadmium in that white vapor that's coming off the stack. Yes, there is. And not only that, there's a cluster here of a very, very rare kind of cancer which is known to be caused by cadmium. Is that the only source? Is that the only pollutant? They aren't the only source. And so attribution is very interesting, but knowing about it is interesting too, because it flags things that you can watch out for as we go down the road. So the NPRI can do that and we can't. But given that information is there and it's now in our big emissions inventory, we'll see where we can take that.
Okay. Great, Dave. Well, thanks so much. And for folks who want to join in, how can they join in? Just maybe mention it again.
CleanAirPlan.ca is our website. That's the Airshed Management Society. The WatershedSentinel.ca is the other one. And my email is Dave at choked.ca. Sorry. And if you email me, Dave at choked.ca, I'll send you an invite. You can join in the Zoom. It'll be recorded and available later, too.
Okay. Dave, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Always a treat. Thanks, Dan.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.